Hi, Ellie. Afternoon. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's so good to see you. I can't believe how long it's been since I've seen you or spoken to you. So it's a great to see you.
That's the beauty of LinkedIn, though, because you can keep connecting with people and keep up to date with them, but you don't really see or speak to them.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I feel like there are so many people, with yourself included, who feel like so top of mind for me, even though I haven't spoken to you in such a long time. But I see your smiley face, and I see the content you post, which I am a big fan of. So I'm delighted to have you on. For those people who don't know you, who might be listening, and I'm sure that's not very many, it'd be great if you could give people a brief introduction to who you are and what you're up to.
Absolutely. So Ellie Twigger, currently looking for my next opportunity, but I am currently consulting for a couple of organisations. But something that I'm really excited about is working with organisations on how individuals can build their personal brand on LinkedIn. Not only building their personal brand, but how to prospect utilising LinkedIn. Gain more meetings, close more deals, gain more revenue.
that's interesting, and I want to dive in to how you got to consulting on this particular topic, because where I know you from is your Sales Loft days, which I believe your most recent role there was in account management. So how did you make the jump from that to decide to start consulting around the personal branding piece? Because I'm sure it's so important, but what made you see that and want to work with companies to help them invest in their people to do the same?
Yeah, so I was at Highspot. That was my most recent role. And unfortunately, my role was eliminated. It was part of a redundancy. So I kind of sat there and thought, the job market is really hard right now. And whilst I am looking for my next role, why don't I go and work with organisations? And something I'm very passionate about, and I post about it a lot, and I'm quite proud of the brand I've created, is a personal brand. But not just that, I've really recognised the importance of it. And so many individuals reach out to me saying, hey, can I ask you a question on how to build a personal brand? What is a personal brand? So I just thought I know a lot of people are doing it, but a small gap in the market, in the sense that I'm very similar to everybody else. I don't have a huge following, but I've very recently built this personal brand. So just sharing how I've done that.
Amazing. And what are some of the most important areas that you're working on within that personal branding? Like, what are some of the, I guess, use cases or challenges that are coming up time and time again when you're speaking to these companies?
I think the first thing that everyone says to me is I'm too scared to post. So they're petrified to post. And I remember I was chatting to one girl a couple of weeks, and she said, oh, I'm scared people are going to take the mick out of me. And I kind of say to her, look, just go for it. Just go for it. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing is I don't know what to post. So I always recommend to, when you are thinking about a post or posts, to segment it into three different areas. So yourself, anything personal relating to you, anything professional, so relating to your career and your role and your development. And then the third section is company. So what if you are, you know, a sales rep at an organization, what this is to kind of, you know, gain inbound leads and whatnot and visibility for the organization. But think of it like that. And then the second thing to think of is just post whatever you feel comfortable with. And I mean, the other day I posted a photo from hospital because I'm currently going through egg freezing. And I was quite nervous to post it, and people encouraged me to post it because they said, look, everyone is experienced, like not everyone, but some people might be experiencing it and wanting to learn about it. By posting about it, it's kind of making it human. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest gap I see with LinkedIn, is that you've got all these posts that are AI created, they're company created, marketing created, but the ones to me that really stand out are the personal ones.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, humans buy from humans, and LinkedIn is a, you know, can be used as a sales tool. So you really do need to, you know, bring your human side to the platform, so people know who you are and what you stand for.
I think that's so powerful, and like, well done to you for posting something that I think, you know, I'm sure lots of people can learn from, but I think also adds a dimension to you, Ellie. And I think we've gone through this stage and this phase on LinkedIn of it being almost like humble bragging, or like not even that humble, right? But just bragging of, you know, I've hit my target, my team's hit their target. And actually, as I go through my saved posts on LinkedIn, a lot of what I save is I didn't hit target this quarter, and here's my learnings. Like, I think there is so much about this, like, vulnerability. Just curious on your takes on that, because obviously you've got so many people who are kind of in camp one of like, I want to be vulnerable and I want to talk about what's not working so other people can learn. And then you've got the other side, which is like, rah, 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 rah. And you kind of do question the, I guess, the bit of the human aspect and the I find that hard to relate to and connect to sometimes. What's your take on that?
I think it's the relatability, just showing that you're that's what I'm very similar to you. When I look at my saved posts, it's the ones that it's the posts that firstly have taught me something, or it's the ones that have, you know, just embrace their authentic self. And that's the one thing I do say to people, is don't try and be somebody you're not. And it's about finding your voice. When people that I follow on LinkedIn, you can really distinguish whose voice is whose from what they post about, even how they write, even that. And I think that's what I see to be successful. And the other thing is, when you talk about, you know, those, oh, I'm doing amazing, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. It's kind of a bit, we all know everyone has down days. We all know that everybody has hardships. It's about finding that balance, because obviously you do want to big yourself up, but then you also want to say, look, this is where I'm at right now. And my thought is, if anyone can learn one thing from what I've posted, then I've had a successful post.
Yeah. What's your take on... I feel like when I look through my LinkedIn, a lot of people that are building their personal brand and posting tend to be not VPs, CROs, CEOs. It tends to be sort of frontline managers, ICs, etc. So I think, like, at least from people I'm following, I'm seeing this kind of gap in between those ICs and between kind of what I'd call senior leadership. You've obviously got LinkedIn influencers and stuff as well. But I would love to see more execs posting. But I think, you know, I wonder whether there is a bit of a mindset of, well, I'm an exec and I shouldn't be posting, or I shouldn't be, you know, maybe doing as much as that first category of yourself you talked about. What's your take on that? Yeah. What do you think that execs could be doing to, I guess, you know, show a bit more of themselves on LinkedIn?
I think it's a generation thing. So if you look at, you know, you see a lot of millennials posting, and I'm thinking now, and I know those some people who are execs but fall into that lower bracket of, you know, age group, and they're the ones that are posting and being very open. And I think when we think about LinkedIn, there's obviously you use it for sales, but then you also use it for recruitment. So you want to put your company out there, and as an exec, I'd want the best talent to be joining my organization. So I definitely think there is a use case for them to do it. I think it is just, they haven't done it in the past. Some maybe haven't, I mean, I think about myself, I've grown up with social media. I've grown up with Facebook. I've grown up with Instagram. So it's very second nature to us. Whereas for those who haven't, kind of think it's slightly alien to be posting and being so human on a platform that is meant to be about your professional self. And I think that is reflective in the way the work life has changed.
Yeah.
In like, especially before COVID, and I do think COVID has helped this. It was very much you have your work self and then you have your actual self. But now the two worlds are blending, where you're just bringing your full self to work every day. And that's what we're seeing on LinkedIn. if I was an exec, I'd be trying to post all the time just to get my company out there and be hiring the right talent as well.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point of what you talk about. Like, it's a, probably is a generational thing. And, you know, you and I have both grown up with social media. So it's our, it's almost our go-to. And so I think, you know, posting, typing, commenting, liking, we're kind of used to that engagement. Whereas I think you're totally right. It probably is a bit more of a generational thing.
So even just having your phone, like, I'm constantly on LinkedIn and just flicking through and liking, commenting. And people are like, oh, you're always on your phone. But I see that with our generation. Like, they're just constantly on their phone and managing it. Whereas people, other people may just want to put their phone away and because they're not used to having that phone with them all the time.
Yeah.
And you like you said, doing those type of motions, it's just second nature to us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's... That I and I think it has its pros and cons, right? I think, you know, when we won't get into that conversation now, but that definitely does have its pros and cons. You alluded in your previous comment around hiring and recruitment, and you talked a little bit about the fact that the job market is a bit tough right now. And I know you're openly looking for a new role, which is really exciting. And I'm sure people that are listening to this are going to be in similar positions potentially as well. Curious just on your insights on what you're seeing in the job market right now.
Oh, wow. I could talk about this for days. I think so right now I'm seeing a lot of job posts on LinkedIn, but they've been up for a month, and then or the same job post been up for 3 weeks or 2 weeks. And I think necessarily people aren't actively recruiting, but they have the posts up there. So what, and I'm speaking with about this with a lot of my friends who are in similar situations where you're applying for jobs that are active on LinkedIn, but you don't hear anything because they're, or they say, oh, there isn't actually a role. And I'm unsure why organizations are doing that. It's whether they just want to see what talent's coming in or to make it look like they are hiring and they are growing. So that's one takeaway I'm having. The second takeaway is there's so many people competing for the same role. So you're not the probably what we were competing for a couple of years ago, there's probably like four times the number of people. Wow. And my feedback has always been there's someone with more experience than you. There's someone with more experience. You've just missed out because there's someone with more experience. And what I believe is happening is people are starting to apply, but not below their level, if that makes sense. So a VP might apply for a sales manager job, sales manager might apply for an enterprise rep job, and so on, so on, because it's so crowded. And what I'm also seeing is a change in terms of the packages that they're offering. So these packages from COVID that used to blow everybody's mind aren't there anymore because people, they know that they can reduce it slightly given the fact that there's so many people applying. I think as well, just with people, organizations aren't sure what they want at all, what they want. So they're just trying to speak to as many people as they want. And 9 times out of 10, it's a referral that gets the job, or it's an internal candidate. So, I mean, if anyone is listening to this and is feeling it, I'm with you. It is really hard. But that's another reason why I'm doing my consulting at the same time, because I'll be honest, I'm not good not having a job and I'm getting itchy feet. So this is just keeping me busy in the meantime. But yeah, it is really hard out there.
Wow. So many insights that there's so much to unpack there. The first thing you said to me was really interesting around potentially companies having a post out there, but not actively recruiting, or that post has been there for a long time, which says two things to me is that role taking a while to fill, but then doesn't necessarily line up with what you were saying about how many applicants there might be, or are they just seeing what talent comes through the door in which feels like a bit of a waste of time, right? So, you know, that's interesting to me. You talked about the fact that it's really competitive. What do you think is driving there being, you know, an outweigh of supply versus demand?
I think because there's so many organizations that are streamlining, So people are streamlining and redundancies are happening. And I think there's potentially a couple of years ago, organizations were very open about the redundancies, specifically in COVID, because it was, you know, normally blamed or based on COVID. But now when you're on the organizations on their third, fourth round of redundancies, they aren't going to be as open about it. So a lot of people are in the same boat of me where they've been hit with a restructuring. They haven't got a job anymore. So there's so many people out there. And what as well, there's so much technology that is, you know, the likes of AI, the likes of like evolving technology that is potentially replacing some of the role. Instead of having, you know, five reps, they may only need three reps because they're going to use that other budget to invest in technology. So I think that is narrowing the market as well. And then the other thing is that teams would rather, well, this is my perception. So again, I don't have any evidence on this, but rather than having 10 reps who are all, you know, just missing target, having seven reps who are all overachieving on target. That's what I'm seeing happening as well.
I think that's spot on. And I think, you know, this whole, I think 2021, when we came out of COVID, it was this kind of like growth at all costs. So like, let's just grow, even if it means hiring 20 SDRs and 20 AEs. And it was really important to have specialization. And I'm still a really big fan of specialization because I do think that you need to have, you know, prospecting, you know, pipeline progression and management and closing, and then account management all separated. But I think now people are being asked to do more with less. So I think, you know, yeah, the bar has been raised that, you know, account management are responsible for cross-sell and upsell, and we're seeing a bit of a wind down in customer success. And, you know, I think, you know, AEs being asked to do more prospecting, which I'm a fan of, but, you know, I think, yeah, there is, you know, well, as a result, let's shrink the SDR team. So I think we're seeing all these kind of different dynamics play. I'm curious, when you're going through conversations, once you do get your foot in the door, are companies being open about any of these insights that you've shared with us?
I'd say definitely on the experience piece. So when obviously if it is a no, or I ask, you know, any red flags in terms of me, you know, as you would if you're a closer, when I try to close the conversation, they say, and we're just a bit concerned about your experience, even though I'm applying for a role and I've got, what, 3, 4 years, 5 years sales experience. That's their biggest concern, is the experience, because 9 times out of 10, they've got somebody with more experience who is interviewing through the door. And then they also want someone to be specialized in a sense that not necessarily the role, but the industry. So for examples, if you're interviewing for a payment role, a role in the payment space, they want you to have payment industry, a payment experience. If you're cyber, they want you to have cyber experience as well. So, and again, they can be picky with who it is that they choose and to take forward. That's what I'm seeing. And even if, like, you know, the job advert doesn't say you need this type of experience, that's their no. They're not going to say, look, it just isn't right. It's always kind of the, how do I put my feeling at the moment? I'm just, you know, when you're trying to put like a plug in like a plug in a round hole, I need to just go and find my own square plug.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm feeling at the moment. I'm just not quite the right fit for the organization. But then it's the same vice versa. I've had a lot of organizations reaching out to me with roles, but I've purposely chosen not to interview for them because necessarily the product isn't a good fit, the culture isn't a good fit. So it definitely does work both ways as well.
Firstly, I really like that analogy. And secondly, like, so much there has got my brain moving, because I think when you talk about, well, there was two pieces on experience that you talked about. One was like, oh, we're going to hire someone more experienced than you. which, like, to me, I don't know you that well, but I know you, and you've worked for two amazing companies where you've been there through their big stages of growth, and you have good experience having been in multiple different roles. So that's like always a bit of a weird one to me, because I think I was hoping that companies were moving away from that, and they were moving towards, like, let's hire for attitude, let's hire for hunger, let's hire for all of those kind of what I describe as innate qualities, that, you know, gone are the days where they say to someone, oh, I need someone with, you know, 30 years sales experience. Well, I was calling Alan diapers back then, but, you know, and like, and what does that really give us? And the second piece, which was around industry, because, you know, I feel like we are moving away from product and technical aspects of the industry becoming, I think those things can be learned. So I think, you know, if you were in a payments role, you can learn the payment space, you can learn the personas, the challenges, all that sort of stuff. If I was hiring, I would still look for kind of what, you know, the sort of attitude stuff, the sales stuff, you know, are you a good listener? Are you curious? You know, are you process driven? All those sorts of things. So those things that you pointed out, like, I was hoping that they would be different, because I was hoping you'd move on. But I think what I will say is, I think companies probably aren't in a position to take as much risk as they might have done 3 or 4 years ago.
And I do think the hiring process is slightly flawed, in the sense that it's seven stages. And there's normally, you know, you have your standard, you know, HR screening, then you have an interview with the manager, then, you know, team, culture, and then you, like, normally around like the fifth or sixth stage, you have a big presentation. Now, on these presentations, they've probably taken me like 15 hours per go for me to create these presentations. And there's a lot of work that goes into these presentations. And I think that then I'm not sure why they do it, because normally the presentation is on the product that you're selling. And one of the feedback I had was, oh, you didn't know enough about the product. And I said, well, because I don't work for the organization, but I'm confident that I demonstrated my skills. And I think that's the issue, is that you're asking, you know, candidates to spend so much time presenting, and then they don't even get the feedback as to why they weren't successful. So that, in a sense, is where it is flawed.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a case that they're focusing on the wrong things, and I'm not sure what it should look like, but focus more on the selling skills. When we spoke about experience, or say product, that is something that can be taught in a shorter space of time than teaching someone how to be a good account manager, how to be a good rep. So that, and then what happens is you have this presentation, then you potentially you speak to two more people, you know, whether it's a VP, whether it's a founder, if it is a startup. And sometimes it feels that you should have just had that founder startup meeting right at the beginning, because it's going to be their decision anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to be deciding. I haven't even done as many interviews as I'd like to do, but it's taking up quite a lot of time. But on the positive, I'm learning a lot, and it's definitely helping me. You know, there's been some organizations that I've actually pulled out of interview processes, because when I'm doing this presentation, I'm thinking, I don't think I'm going to enjoy this. So I've purposely pulled myself out of it.
Well, good for you for pulling out of it. And I think you've taken the right approach, because I think, you know, often when people are looking for a role, it's easy to, you know, try and, to use your analogy, just to try and force that square peg into a round hole, and just say, look, I miss working, I want to get back to it, so we'll make it work. And, you know, you kind of ignore some of the red flags. So good for you for actually stepping away from that and realizing it doesn't align with what you want to do. But I mean, the fact that they are six or seven stages, I mean, that's what CRO processes look like, you know, with a similar time demand, if not less, for a presentation. And I think at the very least, they should be giving you feedback, you know, meeting you live and saying, you know, spending 15 minutes with you to say this isn't going to work. And I think from what you said, it doesn't sound like it's a very appropriate task to set anyway, because I don't think it tells you that much. So it sounds like some companies need a bit of direction on how do we actually find the right talent. But it does sound like there are some flaws. But then to me, that's pretty telling of what the process and what the company looks like. I got asked to do a 30, 60, 90 day plan for a CRO role. And I'm not a big fan of that because I don't think you know enough about the company to put together what you're going to do in 90 days. And I think anyone can put together that, because I think you can just talk about what you would do. It doesn't mean you're actually going to do it. And that to me, and it wasn't the right company for me, but that to me was an indication that I think there's a bit of a culture clash, and I think, you know, and so I think you can tell a lot from the task that they set. That was all I was going to say. Yeah.
And I do think as well, some organisations use it as free consulting. I had a friend who was interviewing for a marketing role, and she had to present, you know, a big plan, like a marketing plan for the next 6 months. And they literally, I think, just like took the marketing plan and rolled with it, but she didn't get the job. And it's the same thing with something that I'm learning is specifically when I'm going into organizations, I'm offering them, you know, what I do in account management and things that I do to make myself successful. And I can see them jotting all the notes down and writing and, you know, saying, oh, that's a great idea. And then someone reached out to me and said, oh, we've just implemented what you apparently said in an interview. You just sit there and you think, okay, so it's just, I think it's a way for them to just get ideas as to what's happening in the market, like what other people are doing, but you don't have to join the organization. And then you're kind of in this catch 22, because you're meant to be in an organized, you're meant to be in an interview, you're meant to be selling yourself, you're meant to be, you know, demonstrating like that you're capable, but then you don't want to come across as arrogant, you don't want to come across as a know-it-all or above your station, and then you don't want to give away all your tips because they'll run with it, but you want to interview. So it's really, really difficult.
That's awful. Like, that's shocking to me that companies do that. And like, if I were you, I'd be thinking, well, you obviously found our conversation valuable because you implemented what I had suggested, but yet you don't want to hire me. So like, there is that disconnect as well, which is like, I'm obviously something I said you liked and something the way that I work you liked as well. So I do hope that you sort of get into more processes which are less flawed. And it sounds like you're good at identifying those red flags as well.
Well, absolutely. And I think as well, I'm noticing them earlier and earlier. And I've actually had some great interview processes, just to put that out there. I've had some fantastic interview processes, and either I've pulled out or it's just not been the right fit or the right time. And that's completely fair. And it's for anyone who's in the same position as me, it can be very, very draining. And when you do face rejection, you just think, gosh, am I good? Am I okay at doing this? And it's just for everyone to remember, yes, you are good. Something is going to come up. It's just got to be, you know, it's going to be the perfect opportunity at the perfect time. And just to keep that in the back of your mind when and if you get another no.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, you know, I there's going to be people out there who might not be as astute to some of the red flags that you have been. So what advice would you have for people who are in similar positions to you right now that are looking for a new role? And what advice would you give them to help them spot some of those flags that you've been able to?
So I think that it's working out what's important to you. So whether that's culture, progression, product. So the first thing that I have been doing is reaching out to people who currently work at the organization or people who have previously worked at the organization, just to get a, you know, understanding as to why they're still there and why they left. Because 9 times out of 10, we're going to ask that question in the interview process, but they're going to give a very, you know, constructed response. Mm. If you just reach out to someone, LinkedIn and drop them a voice note and say, hey, I'm interviewing at X company, would love just to get your like candid feedback on the organization. And especially those that have left, you get that vibe as well. I wouldn't necessarily take everything that Glassdoor says for truth. I think it's always those that are very unhappy who will post on Glassdoor. So that's why I would rather directly go to those at the organization. The next thing is an organization that takes too long to respond. I mean, some processes take 2 months because there's a week each stage, and you know, it's booking it in and getting time scales. That to me, like, your time is precious. Remember that your time is precious. So if it's taking a long time, then question yourself whether you want to be at an organization that is very slow and robotic in their process. And then the third thing is, I'm obviously, if anyone knows what I post on LinkedIn, I'm a huge advocate for women in sales and women in tech, and ensuring that there are women in the hiring process. I think that is really crucial, because we obviously want diversity. And if there is only men in the hiring process, they're not getting a balanced view. So I definitely, and also making sure that it's more than, you know, potentially one interviewer, because if the meeting isn't being recorded and it's just one person with yourself, you could say anything, but there's no fact, and they may just not like you. They may just not like what you've said. And I've had comments in the past from people where thankfully there has been two interviewers, and we've spoken a lot about my LinkedIn posting, and someone says, oh, I'm not keen on how much, like, how open you are. And the other person is like, well, actually, I think it's really good. And that allows them to give a different perspective. If it's just the same person, then I'd question it a bit. But yeah, it's just, you get a gut feeling. You get a gut feeling to anything you do. And I've been following my gut. And right now, my gut hasn't, like, it's not as if my gut says, yeah, this is the one. I haven't had that yet. I haven't said, thought, okay, I'm definitely going to get this one, or that it's going to work out. So something is misaligned here, and I've just got to wait for my gut to go, yeah, this is the one, let's go, let's run with it.
That's some really, really good actionable advice for people. I think what you said around timing is really key as well, because I think, you know, companies, it's like, oh, I need to hire an account manager immediately, and you know, we really need to fill this role, and then they have a completely different process when you actually go through that, and you think, well, is it really that urgent? And we're in we're in a market now where things are changing, and I know people that have started interview processes for an AE role, and by the time they've got to near the end, the role's been pulled, or you know, budgets have changed and headcount has changed. And so I think it is a difficult time to be navigating, but you've also shared some really positive things as well, so I don't want this conversation to be all doom and gloom.
It's not completely negative. I'm learning a lot about myself, and I'm learning what I want and what I don't want in my next role. And I think, like you mentioned earlier, like, I'm quite lucky that I know exactly what I want, whereas some other people, the worst thing you can do is join an organization. You're like, I absolutely really don't like it. It needs to be the perfect one.
Yeah.
And if it means just holding out a couple of weeks longer, and if you can afford it, then do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice. And I really like how you summarized it into those three buckets of culture, progression, and product, because I think that will help people sort of stack rank how they feel about those things, and then, you know, to see whether the company, you know, lines up with that. So that's really, really helpful. I've loved this conversation, Ellie. So thank you so much for joining us. Any parting wisdom or advice for people that are looking for a new role?
The main thing I would recommend is network. Every single interview process I've been in hasn't been a job that I've actively applied for. It's people I've either asked to be introduced, I've either reached out on LinkedIn, or I've been referred. And I think that is the new norm now for getting into an interview. If you think about how many CVs that they run, they they run through, and it's so automated now and it doesn't get your personality across. I think just bring yourself forward straight away, connect with the hiring manager, the team members, send a video, explain how excited you are about the role. Even reach out to the CEO, who cares? Just to say, show that you're so eager. It's a bit like sales and prospecting. You need to be memorable, and you need to be memorable in the hiring process as well. And just think about, you know, different ways. Okay, how can I be memorable? And how can I, you know, get to that first interview, second interview, all the way to the seventh interview to hopefully get an offer?
Yeah. Well, also you're demonstrating how you would be approaching your role in sales. So I love that you're sort of mirroring that back to prospecting. And thank you so much, Ellie. Let's stay in touch. I'm really keen to see where you land next. But thank you for sharing all these amazing insights and nuggets. It was great to have you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.